Hello and welcome to The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24. Each week we'll be hearing from the sharpest minds and freshest thinkers in the world of finance, taking you beyond the numbers and the hype and getting to the heart of the big issues of the day. This week, in the first of two special programmes, we dive into the UBS CIO Year Ahead 2019, the definitive investment outlook on the next 12 months. The report's editor-in-chief is among the guests from UBS Wealth Management who'll address the key issues set to define the year ahead, from navigating volatility to tactical asset allocation to incorporating the three L's of liquidity, longevity and legacy into planning for the future. We start with Kiran Ganesh, editor-in-chief of the Year Ahead 2019 report. Kiran, perhaps we could start with you providing a strategic overview, if you like, with your editor-in-chief's hat firmly in place. What are the aims of this piece?
What the year ahead is really our key view on what we think is going to happen in markets in 2019, how the economy is going to develop, and we hope that our clients and advisors can use this to have a conversation about how people are positioned and whether that positioning makes sense in the context of, you know, so what we expect is going to happen in the world.
Let's talk next, Kiran, about some of the principles that define the UBS approach to wealth management, if you like. Even in the introductory to the report, some pillars of that approach are outlined, the so-called three L's, liquidity, longevity, legacy. Can you tell us how you and your colleagues have integrated those kinds of factors into this piece?
This is something which we've introduced globally for the first time this year. It's something which some of our colleagues in the US have been doing for a little while, but now as a global wealth management organization, we've brought that together to bring to, you know, all of our clients around the world. And the idea is that as the economic cycle has advanced and markets are getting much more volatile, we do think it's a really important time for investors to think about their financial plan and what they're trying to achieve. Because when markets suddenly drop 3% in a day, as they did this week, you can be put on the spot in terms of, you know, what decision should I make? We think it's important at those kind of moments that you know also what you're trying to achieve. So the liquidity, longevity and legacy approach is a framework that we're using, you know, around UBS Global Wealth Management to discuss with our clients what are they trying to achieve, and then structure their wealth in a way that they can achieve those goals whilst feeling comfortable they can make the right decisions at times of market pressure.
Kiran, one of the challenges of creating a report like this that sets out expectations, strategy for the year ahead, is that you have to try and factor in, I suppose, potential surprises, which by their nature are unpredictable. How do you go about doing that?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. And I think when we're saying, well, what will be the surprises, we have to acknowledge up front that we're going to miss the really total surprises that come out of left field. So we have to kind of acknowledge that as a starting point and expect to be surprised with something left field in 2019. But we can at least see some of the areas which are going to be in focus. So we know that, for instance, the relationship between US and China is currently a major variable for markets. You know, is there going to be a trade relationship between the two which is positive, or one which is full of acrimony? We know that there's going to be a big debate around interest rates in the US and in Europe. You know, should central banks keep increasing interest rates because unemployment is still low, or should they respond to some of the uncertainty out there in the world and keep interest rates where they are or even cut them? So whilst acknowledging that we're going to be surprised by some things, we can at least focus in on a couple of these sort of key variables, things like central bank policy, things like US-China relations, things like the health of the Chinese economy, and say, well, if these things change, then they're going to affect markets. So let's think about how they could surprise. So maybe we see a truce in US-China relations, or maybe we see tariffs hiking up beyond what is even currently being discussed. You know, maybe we see central banks really having to increase interest rates very quickly to respond to perhaps rising inflation, or perhaps we see central banks cutting rates, which would be a total surprise. So we can at least think in the right dimensions when we're constructing these surprises.
Kiran Ganesh, let's talk next a little about where we are in the economic cycle. Clearly, we are in a maturing cycle. That makes the investment environment, I guess, that bit more challenging in broad terms. Can you tell us a bit about what the report sets out in terms of how best to navigate that more challenging environment?
We've entitled the year ahead this year Turning Points, because that's the big question on people's mind is, you know, when is the turning point coming in the economic cycle? Because it's been running for quite a long time now. We've had very healthy returns in equities. We've had a very long period without a global recession. So the big question is, when is the turning point? What we think is important at this stage is that investors do sort of stay invested. I mean, we're saying that, you know, the cycle is maturing, but you can typically get pretty healthy returns, at least historically, in that period, sort of 18 to 6 months before a recession. You have typically seen markets continuing to appreciate. So we do think it's important that investors sort of stay invested in things like equities, because that's where they're going to get the growth. I mean, interest rates and bond yields are still relatively low. But the market is going to start to anticipate the ending. It only takes a few investors to start to worry, and then you can see higher volatility, as we're already seeing. So whilst we're telling people to stay invested, they also need to be looking out for how they can help protect their portfolios against the market starting to worry. So we're emphasizing things like, you know, making sure that you're being selective in the credits you're choosing, not choosing things like US senior loans where we think that there's too much leverage, and looking perhaps to safer credit within equity investments, looking for higher quality companies with more sustainable earnings, rather than looking at sort of particularly cyclical names at this point in time, and making sure that you're well diversified against a range of political or corporate risks, or which tend to become more prominent as we get late in the cycle. So, you know, the key message is to stay invested, because we think there still will be positive returns, and we don't think we're, you know, really at the end of this economic cycle, but take a few measures to make sure your portfolios are protected. And as we mentioned earlier, the liquidity, longevity and legacy approach we think is important to undertake at this point, because when the downturn comes, which it will at some point in the future, then we think it's really important that you have a plan in place before that.
Kiran Ganesh. Still to come on the Bulletin with UBS, we'll look in more detail at the asset allocation dynamics. Andreas Kuster is head of global asset allocation in the CIO at UBS Wealth Management. Andreas, we've heard from Kiran Ganesh already, but from your side of things, what is the year ahead report really designed to do?
So every year, close to the end of the year, we try to put out a document which brings together all the best thinkers of UBS Wealth Management to cover different topics which have obviously a more a tactical view, so what's happening actually in 2019, but also looking a little bit further out on cyclical and secular trends. So it's basically bring together what we feel 2019 bring us. After a year, we said last year a lot of volatility will come to the market. We had volatility, so we have to figure out, did it get worse from here or better? But then we also have a longer-term themes about our big push into sustainable, which always was in the heart of every investor, because if you run a company, you have to be sustainable, otherwise you can't run it over multiple cycles, as well as topics about cyclical trends like urbanization, aging societies, and how is our answer.
Andreas, let's talk a little bit about the V word now. That word is volatility, of course. We've spoken about the difficulty in trying to price in political uncertainty into good strategy. What are some of the key takeaways maybe that the report sort of sketches over in terms of how to factor that sort of narrative into the 2019 play?
I think the big message was last year, be prepared that volatility is back. But at that stage, people were looking at us and saying, yeah, we know that it should be more volatile than what we experienced from 2012 to 2016, where central banks were trumping with their liquidity any kind of other risks. So even we had some political risks in 13, 14, as in Europe, we had some concerns about regions. But the liquidity was just giving us the impression of very low, a little bit like a very nice run on prices. And we said we have to relearn to live with volatility, because central banks basically were getting comfortable moving into 18 to say the economic growth is strong enough that we can take some of the emergency measures away. Some of them were coming with higher rate hikes. Some were coming with reducing the balance sheet. So we talked already about be prepared that volatility is back. But then it becomes, when it starts to be volatile, people get quickly uncomfortable and saying, oh, I haven't seen that for a long time. Do I have to do something about it? And so what we had was central banks unwind on the one hand, but then also we had additional volatility coming from politics, as you said, which we always had in guises over the last years. But given that central bank liquidity can't overlay this kind of political risk, it comes more to the forefront. And then obviously with this whole trade debate or dispute, we haven't seen that for a long period of time. It was one of the big assumptions that free trade is embedded in this global society. And as a company, irrespective of where you are on this globe, you can sell your product everywhere. That's still not debated that you can't sell your product anywhere. So that's already still good, but the entry prices to sell it everywhere is getting up. So at the moment we talk about tariffs, which is just another quite of cost to enter a market. But we have seen also in some historic lessons that it starts often with tariffs and then it ends up with quotas and saying you can't sell more than X, Y, Z product or this amount in this country. So luckily we are not at this stage yet. We always hope that it's more a negotiation tactic, what especially the US and China are doing at the moment. But we have to be aware of that this is coming more to the forefront and we have to build that into our position. So at the moment it seems more a normalization. If you look at all the volatility indices, like the VIX, is a good interpretation. They've just moved back to historic averages. They haven't moved into a high volatility regime yet. But if you come from years of basically no volatility, it's like basically the change makes you uncomfortable. And you feel that in discussion with clients, with other market participants, the uncertainty level, they have to retrain to live with volatility, which gives us opportunities. And we have used it a couple of times in 2018 already. The case of Italy, for example, take some profits on overshooting. So from a fund manager, actually, it's a good thing because you can make money for clients. From a client perspective, you have to get used to it that volatility is back. And 19 is not going to change because we're just moving it another year in the bull market. Central banks are tightening liquidity further. The economy is growing nicely at trend and inflation is creeping up. So again, you should expect a normalization, but we wouldn't call it yet an end of a cycle volatility. It's really like retraining for something which we started to talk about 18 and 19 will be the same as 18.
Let's talk about where we're at in an obviously maturing cycle. And I just wondered, perhaps as a final thought from you, in terms of navigating a more challenging investment environment as that cycle matures, What are some of the secrets? I know the report, the Year Ahead document looks at this. Is it about, you know, you're head of asset allocation? Is it about reviewing asset allocation in across portfolios? Is it about that old traditional principle of diversification? What's some of the ways to succeed and to navigate that more challenging environment?
The last point you made, I think, is a very important one. For years, we've had the alternative asset class who bails us out. Traditionally, you're building a portfolio out of equities and bonds. Equity gives you the capital appreciation, bonds give you the nice coupon, and it can be your safety net if equity falls. Unfortunately, bonds over the last years have yielded nothing, so coupon was low, and also it couldn't fulfill the hedging of the equity risk. So what an head of asset allocation has to do is compensate for that lack of income and compensating for that lack of safety net. We said, okay, we have to mechanically build in more hedges, absence of bond markets being there. So in the US, you have to do it slightly less. But in Europe, we still had for the whole year protection in the portfolio. We used US duration to hedge because there was nothing, the markets, because there was nothing yielding in Europe and in Japan, using the yen as a stabilizer. So our role is to figure out when we calibrated a portfolio for a client maybe 10, 15 years ago, we had a specific assumptions, and with this low interest rate, some of the assumptions have been more active in a portfolio than we should normally do. In the US, as I said, good news, there is an alternative again. Bonds are back to be giving you a decent income and they can stabilize. Unfortunately, in clients in the rest of the world, that news is not there. So that's a little bit how we build our portfolios and our role in this challenging environment. a cycle doesn't end just by age. And that's what we firmly believe. There's always something at the end happening to determine the end of the cycle. Historically, it was the oil price, the central banks, financial tightening, fiscal tightening by government, exogenous shock, or a credit crunch. So our job is not now getting worried that we're in year 10 of a cycle, but just saying, what might be the reason this time it ends the cycle? Central banks relatively relaxed, apart from the US, they're not normalizing. The oil price has come down. Governments are actually fiscally expansionary instead of restrictive. So it looks at a credit crunch and exogenous event. So North Korea, US came off of that a little bit. So it seems to be that we spend a lot of time on looking at credit, excessive building up of leverage. But even there, we have a lot of, call it maybe amber signs, if we just took, take the traffic light situations, but we don't have big flashing reds yet. So that's why we're in this challenge between an economy which is growing nicely. There's a lot of risks out there which are coming more to the forefront because liquidity being withdrawn, but none of the tail risks we look intensively at are strong enough to end the cycle. And that's why we talk more about 19 in transition year, 20 might be a year where we see a recession. But at this stage, it's too early to basically change your strategy dramatically, but you have to basically counter-cyclical trades in there, knowing that the cycle might end earlier than you think. So we have to basically not spend everything on one decision. But I think we are nicely positioned for that.
And that's Andreas Kuster bringing us to the end of this 218th edition of the Bulletin with UBS, setting the agenda in the fast-moving world of finance each week here on Monocle 24. We'll have more on the Year Ahead 2019 report next week. But in the meantime, you can listen again and find out more at monocle.com or wherever you find your podcasts. The Bulletin with UBS on Monocle 24.